Our reading this morning is Isaiah chapter 35. Isaiah 35. The desert and the parched land will be glad. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it will burst into bloom. It will rejoice greatly and shout for joy. The glory of Lebanon will be given to it, the splendour of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the glory of the Lord, the splendour of our God. Strengthen the feeble hands, steady the knees that give way. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear, your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution. He will come to save you. Then will the eyes of the blind be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then will the lame leap like a deer and the mute tongue shout for joy. Water will gush forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The burning sand will become a pool, the thirsty ground bubbling springs. In the haunts where jackals once lay, grass and reeds and papyrus will grow. And a highway will be there. It will be called the Way of Holiness. The unclean will not journey on it. It will be for those who walk in that way. Wicked fools will not go about on it. No lion will be there, nor will any ferocious beast get up on it. They will not be found there, but only the redeemed will walk there, and the ransomed of the Lord will return. They will enter Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and joy will overtake them, and sorrow and sighing will flee away.
Done then. Can you all hear me okay? Yes, excellent, good. Well, it's lovely to be here again, even though I was cursing camper vans on my way up the A9, but anyway, there we go. It is lovely to be with you. We're going to be speaking about God's promised presence. What does that mean? What does that look like? And how might that affect the way that we then live? And before we turn to, it's just going to be one verse from Isaiah 35 we're going to focus upon. I want to actually just say a little bit about God's presence, first of all. And I'm going to turn to one of the Psalms in order to do so. But I want to start with this question, which is this. How well do you know yourself? So I'm getting some uncomfortable smiles, a few blank looks. Who knows you best? How about putting it that way? Do you think you know yourself best? That's what lots of folks think now, you know. You know you best, you know. You know yourself, and each person knows themselves best. That's certainly what lots of younger folks will think now. But think about the times maybe when others have seen things in your life that you haven't been aware of. Maybe they've pointed out the way that you've said something. Maybe, like me, you might be my wife who says, "Why are you grumpy today?" And I say, "I'm not grumpy," right? To think of the number of times someone's pointed out something that you weren't aware of and you suddenly realize they're seeing something in you that you don't see. And that's often the case. We don't see things in ourselves. Others do see things in us. So, who knows us best? It's one of the reasons that the videos on YouTube, if you ever get stuck in that particular rabbit trail of bad auditions, you know, when people think that they're fantastic at singing and they're really not, and the joke's on them. People who think they know themselves but actually don't. So, what if there's someone who knows each of us, knows you better than you know yourself? Knows absolutely everything about you, knows what's best for you, knows what's best for you better than you know what's best for you, sees absolutely everything so that there are absolutely no surprises, nothing hidden. Is that good news or is that bad news? Well, it kind of depends, doesn't it? But what about if that person who knows us fully and completely with no surprises whatsoever is also for you and not against you? Not only knows what's best for each one of us, but has the power to do what's best for each one of us and promises what's best for each one of us, because although he knows us completely and fully, also loves us. Because that's exactly what the Bible says God says about himself. Psalm 139. Lord, you've searched me, you know me. You know when I sit, when I rise, you perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out, my lying down. You're familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. No surprises for God. You created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. And the psalm is on that basic theme of God knowing us intimately, completely, with no surprises. Nothing that he's going to find out tomorrow about you or me that he didn't know today or from eternity. Nothing is going to make him go, I didn't know that about him, I'm out of here. God, who knows completely, knows what's best for us, which is not necessarily what we think is what's best for us, knows us better than we know ourselves, knows what's best, promises what's best, and has the power to bring into our lives what is best. Now, if that's who God is, and the Bible testimony is ample that that's exactly who God is, that's who he consistently says that he is, then who do I want in charge of my life? Me, with my limited self-knowledge and my unlimited capacity for self-deception, or him, who knows me fully and actually knows what's best for me? Will I welcome this God and his presence and live in the light of that promised presence, or will I run from it, avoid it, terrified of exposure? Will I run and try to hide from this God? And that's the question each one of us faces every moment of every day. Do I think this God's good enough to be trusted? Can I trust that he sees everything in me and loves me? Or do I need to run away and hide and say, no, thank you, I'll do it myself? Or maybe you can see this part of my life, but not this bit. No, I'll keep that to myself, thank you. Or there's bits of my life that I want to be in charge of because I don't think that you want what's best for me now. And this is all background, really, to thinking about this one verse in Isaiah 35:4. So if we can just put it back to verse 4. There we go. Top of the screen there. We'll come to that in a second or two. The background to focusing on this today has been something of my own journey over the last 6 months or so. So in my mornings, as I sit down with Scripture, I try and read a chapter of the Old Testament, chapter of the New Testament. I just keep going. And I've been reading Isaiah on a loop now. Just started my fourth time through it. And that's because Isaiah is so rich, so full. If you want to understand what the New Testament's saying, you kind of want to dig into Isaiah. Not that you can't understand the New Testament, but the richness and depth, because Isaiah is quoted so frequently and shapes so much of what's said. So if I read Isaiah 11 this morning, this is my fourth time through, you can work out how many days I've been reading Isaiah for. If it's 66 chapters with the odd day missed here and there. So I've been pottering around and meditating on certain parts of Isaiah, occasionally able to go to people much cleverer than I am to ask questions about it. It's the great advantage of working in a theological college is that there are people much cleverer than I am. I can go to and say, this bit of Hebrew here, what, am I getting this right or am I getting it wrong? And then seek advice, which is great. And that brings us to Isaiah 35:4. And I've been chewing on this for about 6 months, 6 or 7 months now. I first noticed this verse at a time when I was launching a new master's program at Oak Hill in London, where I work. It's a master's in leadership. And one of the things I was encouraging the participants to do was to seek to grow in self-awareness in whatever way they could. Because if you're going to lead well, then having some level of awareness of the effect you have on others is quite important. The very worst leaders are those who don't have any concept of what they're doing to others and how others are reacting to them. So I was encouraging these guys to take every opportunity to grow in self-awareness. And I thought, well, I could be a complete hypocrite here by not doing this myself, by not taking advantage of every opportunity for myself. And so around about that time, I began to meet and have good, deep conversations with an older, wiser Christian man who asked me some hard questions and made some observations. And it's been a really interesting process. And what had triggered that was I'd noticed some very strong reactions in myself. Launching this new master's, fearful about how it was going to go, anxious about whether I was going to do a good job. I just thought, that's interesting. A lot of anxiety, a bit of fear. And I'm reacting to things. So rather than just ignore that, suppress it, pass by it quickly, I'm just like that. I thought, no, I'm going to explore this and have some conversations. And it's been a very interesting process. It's been provocative, very challenging, highly irritating. Someone asks you hard questions about yourself and points things out. That's not always a nice thing to experience. It's good, but it's not necessarily nice. There are times I felt very angry. But it's also been really helpful. The number one thing that he's been encouraging me to do is stop. Just wait. Slow down. Recognize God's promised presence. Don't rush on past. Wait. Recognize that God, the God who promises to be present, really is. However I might feel about it, that's not the question. It's not whether I feel that he's there. But just stop. If God is there, God promises to be present, then recognize that before speaking, before responding, before getting angry or frustrated, before going off in the huff or defaulting to self-pity or whatever other reaction it might be, just to pause and wait. Now, that might sound incredibly simple, but actually, I have found this is incredibly profound, incredibly difficult to do, just to stop, but also extraordinarily helpful. And I'm just going to offer a few words of meditation on this one verse in the hope that it will be as helpful to some of you here as it has been to me. And the starting point is from Psalm 139. The God who promises to be present is the God who actually knows us completely, and knowing everything about us with no surprises, loves completely. The God who sees everything and from whom there is just no point in hiding. Now, you might say, well, why this verse? The reason for that is that it says here, say to the fearful hearts, in the English Standard Version it says there, the anxious hearts, but the Hebrew there is neither of those things. The Hebrew from which this is translated says, say to the hasty of heart. That's interesting, isn't it? Isn't that a really interesting concept? A hasty heart. And what is it has to be said to a hasty heart? Be strong and don't fear. In other words, a hasty heart, if it is hasty, will be weak and fearful. And then there's four things that need to be said to that hasty heart. Your God is coming. Your God is coming with vengeance. Your God is coming with recompense, retribution, or benefits. It's the same word as in Psalm 103, 2. Bless the Lord and forget not all his benefits. And fourthly, your God is coming to save you. Your God is coming. He's coming with vengeance, benefits, and he's coming to save. But it's the hasty heart, not the fearful or anxious, although you can see how a hasty heart could make you anxious or could lead you quickly into fear. But it's a very rich concept. And for me, this is enormously challenging. I've got a very, very busy brain, always in a rush and always have something to say. Always get something to say. Way too much to say. Always ready with a quick comment. Learned it at the dinner table growing up as a defense mechanism. Learned how to use speech to defend self. But I began to reflect on this and realized over my 57 and a bit years so far, I can't think of an occasion when I have delayed saying something that harm has come from it. But I can think of plenty of occasions when I have hastily said something or hastily responded and harm has come. Perhaps you can identify with that. So the harm of a hasty heart, but a heart that might wait, might be safer, might refrain from some of that harm. And that's the idea here that's in this text. A hasty heart, some sort of prompt, something we experience, whether it's something somebody says or the way that somebody interacts with us, a relationship, whatever it is. And a hasty heart responds quickly without stopping. Goes straight to a word or straight to an emotion unfiltered. Do you get the idea? That's the idea of this hasty heart. And in one sense, we've all got hasty hearts. Think about how frequently we end up wanting to say things, feeling strong emotions before we even realize it, before we even know what it is we've reacted against. And what this little verse in Isaiah is saying then is that to that hasty heart, four things need to be said. In other words, that hasty heart's got to stop long enough to hear those four things being said, let them sink in, and then respond. That's how I will safely respond. So each of our hasty hearts needs to stop long enough to hear your God is coming, your God is present. Your God comes with vengeance, with recompense or benefits, and he comes to save. Now, practically, I want to think about what that then feels and looks like, maybe for each one of us. The first thing to say is I just want you to imagine any situation you've been in the last week where you've had a strong emotional reaction to something. Just anything. And I want you to think about that as being a stop sign from God. That's a stop sign that says, oh, stop, wait. Take note, you're feeling things here. You know, we're not going to, as men here, we're not going to allow ourselves to be the caricature of Scottish men that have two emotions. One is all right, the other is anger. We're much more complex than that. But to take that as a stop sign and then these things need to be said. Now, to think about this practically, what happens if I rush past each of these four things, what am I tempted to do? What are you tempted to do? So firstly, your God will come, or your God is coming, more literally. In other words, God is present. I wonder how often actually any of us stop in your average day just to say, God is present. He promises to be present. He says, I will be with you to the end of the age. Emmanuel, God with us, from earlier on in the book of Isaiah, actually. But that idea of God being present, but how often do we stop just to acknowledge that fundamental promise and then act accordingly? Now note, it's not saying that you necessarily feel God to be present. That would be nice. It's a kind of extra bonus, if you like. But in the midst of how most of our lives are, whether it's the busyness or the strain, the stress, or whatever else is going on, we may not feel anything at all. But to stop and remind ourselves of what is true, God promises to be present. So if I don't take note of that, I rush past forgetting that God is actually present. Then there's all kinds of things that follow, all kinds of things I will rush into in terms of my reactions, my responses, my decisions. That's the first bit. Second one, your God comes with vengeance. Now, we might not like the idea of vengeance, but vengeance is closely wrapped up with the concept of justice. It's the idea of God putting right what is wrong, stopping what is wrong, establishing what is right. Now, if I don't stop long enough to recognize that God is the one who comes with vengeance, then I'm going to come with vengeance. Right? I'm going to be the one who runs past this truth, forgetting it, and I can quickly become frustrated, become angry, become despairing. I become very quickly judgmental of others. I respond in anger. I start to hate the world instead of loving people. My hasty heart that rushes to vengeance, whether it's a camper van on the A9 doing 46 miles an hour, or whether it's the person who's deeply offended and disrespected me, or the person who's really hurt and damaged someone I love. If I rush past the God who comes with vengeance, I will take it into my own hands, and I don't know enough. We are creatures and God is God. We are not, and that's good news. And if we try and take vengeance, how does that go? How's that turning out for us? How's that turning out for this world? So that's the second one. God, your God is coming. Your God comes with vengeance. If we rush past those, what happens? We begin to see it. Thirdly, he comes with recompense or retribution or benefits. It can be any of those. And Isaiah is such a subtle writer, it can be all of those at the same time. And if we don't have to choose, we shouldn't. But if we rush past this, we forget that God is good. And he comes with good for people like you and me, whom he knows completely. If I slip past that too quickly, if I rush past and forget that he comes with recompense or benefits, then I'm going to slip really quickly into insecurity. I'm going to fall very quickly into fear of failure, negativity, fear that I'm unloved and unlovable. And if I slip into that idea that God isn't for me, but somehow he's against me, maybe that he's a bit stingy, or he doesn't want to give me good things, or he just isn't good enough for me to trust with all these areas of my life, if I rush past that, I'm going to be in a place of insecurity, trying to get what I can from the world to make my life work. I'm going to start using relationships to get what I think I need. I'm going to start using people. I'll relate to people differently. I will stop loving people and start using them. If I rush past this truth, your God comes and he's good, and he comes with everything that you need. So, he's present, he comes with vengeance, he comes with benefits, and fourthly, he comes to save. He comes to save you. And if we forget that and rush past that with our hasty hearts, then we forget the fact that it's God who saves. He brings salvation. And if I don't remember that, then I'm going to try and save myself. I'm going to justify myself, defend myself, excuse myself. Instead of recognizing, stop, hasty heart. God comes and he's here and he sees you completely and knows you completely. So there's no point in trying to defend yourself. There's no point in trying to justify yourself or make excuses. He sees it all anyway. And he comes not to condemn, but to save. He's not coming to expose and embarrass you and humiliate and condemn you. He is coming to say, Mark, let me deal with it. Let me deal with this mess. Let me forgive all this stuff that you're trying to hide and you're trying to sort out yourself and you're trying to perform better. You're trying to put on a nice front to the world that makes everything look shiny and good. Just stop it. Stop doing it. It's pointless. You're making yourself a Pharisee and you're putting everybody else off the good news of Jesus. Just stop. He comes to save. He comes to heal. He comes to forgive. He comes to sort out the mess. And that means that I can say, Lord, please carry on, because you're a lot better at this than I am. Is that good news or bad news? And if I rush past that, I become defensive if I'm challenged. I make excuses. And furthermore, maybe even more sinisterly, I might try to control and direct other people as though I am their saviour. There's an element of that in all of us too. No, this is God's job, not ours. And he's much, much better at it than we are. So there you go. Four things. A hasty heart that has to stop. Because if the hasty heart doesn't stop, it becomes weak and fearful. So one of the things that might diagnose our hasty hearts is the extent of our weakness and our fear. A hasty heart needs to stop. God is present with you, for you, not against you. He comes with vengeance. He will sort out justice in the world, and you don't have to, because that's what he does. He comes with benefits. He's good, and he can be trusted, and he's for us, and he promises good for us, and he comes to save the mess, the rebellion, the sin, the darkness, the brokenness. He comes to heal. The words for save and heal are very, very similar. It's a similar concept to restore us to be the men and women that he's made us to be. That's what he comes to do. Do I want to rush past all of that and say, no, thank you, I'll do it myself? Or stop my hasty heart? So that's the question for each one of us this day. Do you want to rush past this God who waits with arms open wide saying, no thanks, I know better? Or stop? This is something to do this week. There you go. Try it this week, this coming week. Anytime you feel strong emotions or a strong urge to say something or a strong urge to react, just take that as a big stop sign from God. Take it as a stop sign. Stop. Let's do that now. Let's just stop now. Take a few seconds. Breathe deeply. And let this verse from Isaiah from 3,000 years ago Let that speak to your heart, your hasty heart right now. Hear God saying to you, be strong. Don't fear. Your God comes. Comes with vengeance. Comes with benefits. And he comes to save. Let's just take a few seconds just to let that sink in. And then I'd love to pray for each one of us.